Hello, everyone. My guest today is Ryan Raver, owner of and blogger at thegradstudentway.com, and also author of several ebooks, including Generating a Second Income for the Poor Graduate Student. Ryan is also currently finishing up his PhD studies, and in addition, he's also doing an internship as an associate product manager at a local biotech here in the city of Madison. Welcome, Ryan, and thank you for doing this interview with ITT.
Well, thank you for having me. Mm-hmm.
So to get kind of a baseline for our I've Tried That readers, what were your initial career plans when you first started graduate school, and how did those plans change over time?
That's actually a good question, because when I came into graduate school, I knew I liked research. I knew I wanted to probably have a career as a scientist at a bench somewhere. But it changed over time, because as I started to learn more about the positions and the value of a PhD, and that was typically through informational interviews, that's kind of when I learned to branch out and expand and keep an open mind, because the one thing I didn't know anything about was the business side of science, and that was what excited me, and not just through talking to people, but just doing it myself and picking up a skill set on the side. And one way of doing that was through blogging and getting open exposure and doing also many collaborations. But the one topic that really interested me was it was marketing as well as sales. But this was more of a self-taught way of doing things, and as also through my entrepreneurial ventures that kind of sparked my interest on top of science.
So obviously, you know, starting out as a student, you don't always know where you're going to end up. But now you're here, you're almost at your graduation point. And what do you wish you knew back then when you started as a student? Like when you first started graduate school, what do you wish you knew back then that you know now?
Everything, and that's a pretty general statement. But I wish my future self could hand my past self my entire blog that I have written and just graduate school advice. But the one thing that was missing that I didn't know how to do was how to network, because you don't really think 10 steps ahead when you're in your second year of graduate school. When you're in your fourth and fifth year and you're finishing up, then you do, because you're thinking, what am I going to do for a job? Where am I going to go with this degree? How am I going to use my skill set with this degree? And that part was pretty nebulous to me, unless you go and create those opportunities for yourself.
So. Well, I think as starting graduate students, I know when I was starting, it was just do your research, take your classes, just try to survive the curriculum, and you're not thinking of your future. You're not thinking of what am I going to do post-graduation.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So, and obviously the other big problem with, you know, being a student, being a grad student, or even down the line, even when you're working at your first job or whatever, is oftentimes that job's just not paying that much money. So, I mean, in your case, you know, you were this poor graduate student trying to find a different way of making some extra cash on the side, you know, either from working, you know, doing online work, working from home. For, let's say, a current undergrad or grad student trying to do the same thing right now, what advice would you give them as far as starting out?
Starting out in terms of
like making like a second income online, or just a side income of some kind.
Yeah, you have to go in with the expectation that you're going to fail. And a lot of people will not flat out say that, but I've been running companies and starting businesses since like 2005, and a lot of them have failed. But that's not to say don't do it. It's just more of a reality check, because a lot of your ideas can be good. But the advice that I will give is you have to find what excites you, what your passion is, and what your niche is. Because if you have a certain skill set or whatever it is, I don't care if it's website development, you can take that and capitalize on it, because a lot of times they just sit on it. And I've written about, you know, graduate school tunnel vision, where all you do is focus on your research topic and getting a degree and graduating, but they don't go outside and do things apart from their own work in the lab. So my advice is just to try out multiple things and keep an open mind. I mean, if it's running an eBay store, if it's running a blog, I mean, either way, you're trying something new, and don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone and see where it goes from there, because it's just, the key is persistency, because the people that give up easily don't see what happens, you know, 2 years down the road, and maybe it could have led to a huge opportunity. But it is important, as, you know, we know tuition is on the rise, and you know, graduate school, especially an MBA, isn't cheap. A bachelor degree isn't cheap. So people need ways of making extra income. And I do think the internet is a great way to do that. But my answer would be, a great starting point would just be a blog. Because if you're in graduate school, I assume that you're already somewhat good at writing, and it's going to develop from there. But only 2% of graduate students or PhD graduate students have a professional blog. So if you do that, you're already in the top 2%. So see where it goes from there. But a blog is a beautiful thing, because you can test many different market ideas and opportunities and see where the niche is. What are people typing in on Google? What are the keywords? Where could you develop a product? Like, what is actually hot in the market right now? So
you must have been reading. I've tried that, because I did write a post about keeping a professional blog and how it can help you make money.
I did briefly skim.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So moving along, definitely I think students, I think people in general are just afraid to try different avenues because of the fear of failure. And moving into, you know, you have a blog now, you have an ebook out, and you write on your own blog how you got inspired to do that because you got sick of asking your parents to give you money every month for necessities. Just to give our readers kind of an idea of what was your situation, I mean, how bad did it get financially for you?
It got to the point where I was like $200 a month short. Probably, and that was on a continual basis. So the question is, what do you do if you're short on money? Yeah, you end up calling your parents. You end up trying to make income any way that you can. And actually, that was back in 2009. I noticed that, you know, I'm going to be living off a stipend, which is pretty set. So I launched a woodworking business with my father. And that has actually helped me dramatically, because we are both business partners. And even though he does all the hard labor, he gave me some of the cut. But from there, that still wasn't, it wasn't really good enough in my eyes, or I guess it didn't suffice, because I wanted kind of my own business that I could make my own and tailor it to the graduate student crowd. So that's when it sparked the idea of maybe I could write a book or some sort of product and sell this based on the current skill set that I have and kind of make it my own. So if any graduate student says they don't need a second income, I would say that they're probably lying, because it's you, unless your parents are really supporting, you need to have a second income on the side, especially if you have credit card or student loan debt, which I think almost everyone does have at least some form of that. I do think there is a huge need.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of a single graduate student that is rich and just has deep pockets where they don't need any extra income. So you launched your website, your ebook, as a way of just making that extra money on the side, that second income online. Just out of curiosity, were you more interested in making a passive online income or an active online income? Or was this a kind of a dual approach to doing
it? It was most likely dual. I mean, at first I didn't really know what to expect. I was testing the market, because, again, this is the idea for this product, which is to generate a second income for a graduate student, is the first of its kind. I mean, there's tons of books out there on making income online, but I didn't see a single one that was tailored to graduate students specifically, so I didn't know what to expect. But I went in with the mindset of, yeah, this would create some sort of passive income, but at the same time, I didn't really set the expectation bar. It was just kind of see where it goes.
Okay. Well, I have taken a look at your ebook, Generating a Second Income for the Poor Graduate Student, and I found it quite informative. It does propose a certain way of making that extra money online, making that extra money happen. I don't want to give everything away because obviously our readers can download that book and read it for themselves. But since I've read it, I actually wanted to ask you one question out of its methods. And in that book, you mention outsourcing as just a quick way for making your online product happen, you know, where you're not sitting down and wasting, let's say, half a year making your product happen. Just out of curiosity, how realistic is it to outsource and outsource effectively? Because speaking from personal experience, I've tried to outsource certain tasks. And, like, you know, I went through Odesk, for example, mm-hmm. and the product I got back was horrible. I mean, it was not even readable. And it looked like it had been copied and pasted from just different little sources here and there to escape Copyscape, but it was just a bad product. So I got really turned off on outsourcing.
There's a quality of...
You mentioned TextBroker, I think.
TextBroker, yes, sorry.
That is mentioned on the site.
That is the site that I propose for outsourcing, and there are four different levels of quality of writing, and you can, if you want to go for the affordable one, which is level two, the quality of writing isn't going to be that great. But the whole idea is that if you are a good writer, you could write it yourself or take what someone, because the whole point is that when you outsource, someone will give you a skeleton or a framework. Because, for example, if I want to make a product that I know maybe 50% of the market size or share, I kind of have some idea of what it is, but maybe I need someone, and the whole idea here is that they have expert writers that are in this particular field that are probably going to know more than you. So even though if they write a bad or a semi-quality article, the whole point is that you can improve that writing on your own, but the ideas are still there. So that's kind of the advantage of outsourcing is it saves you time, even though you're like, I have to go back and write this. But it just kind of, and it gets the brain juices flowing, because a lot of times the idea isn't there and there's some things that are missing. So you can use that extra outsourcing as firepower to complete your product. Some people do it for Fiverr.com. Mm-hmm. Pay $5, get a free ebook cover. Pay a guy to do a YouTube video for you. I mean, you just have to work smarter, not harder. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to outsource. It's just only do it if it's going to save you time and money and you need those types of resources to bring in your product and have a complete story. So okay. I leave that up to the person who's developing the product. But my advice was, yeah, to look into TextBroker if you're hitting on the writing part and see where it goes from there.
But that's great advice. You know, go with a site like TextBroker where you can pick the quality of the writer. And if you don't want to do all the legwork, you know, pick a 5-star writer, for example, and also give your writer an outline so you're not surprised by the end product. But in the long run, yeah, like you said, Ryan, you have to look at this as a skeleton that you will have to fill in at some point. And it's not all just, you know, give it away to somebody to work on and you're going to get a finished product that you can just put for sale right away. So that's great advice.
Right, it's going to take time and hard work. And like my book took 2 months to write from start to finish. And
that's pretty fast, actually.
I'll still, 40 pages, but I'll still come out with a second edition, a third edition. I'll probably add on in length. You'll have to revise and update the methods. But Yeah, it's, you know, if you're doing an 80-page book, I'm sure it'd take you 4 months or something. But if you were to outsource that and maybe, you know, pick bits and pieces, it might cut that time in half. Yeah. But it's all what you're willing to pay and, like I said, kind of test out working smarter, not harder. So.
Well, I'll confess that I was a little too cheap with my Odesk clients, or actually my writers. And I think if I paid more, I would have received a better product back, too. So I have to admit to that. Basically, there is a cost associated with generating any kind of product. And overall, how much money do you estimate it actually took to create and market your ebook from start to finish?
That's a good question. You got to get a .com. You got to get a hosting. You got to get an ebook cover. You basically have to set everything in place with, you know, I did WordPress. I had to come up with, you have to pay for security. You got to pay for certain plugins that you want. So up front, I probably spent at least $200 just to get this thing launched. And to get, you know, then I paid $50 to put the book on ClickBank to become a member and to be able to sell. And then there's certain affiliate programs you can join, but... So now we're up to about $250. And then just to keep it running, actually, surprisingly, I only pay like $8 for a .com. Mm-hmm. So it's more is time your money. And yeah, that's what I spend most of my time on is writing and keeping the site active. And that in itself is kind of like viewed as money, because you're like, where's my return of investment? There has to be something that comes from this, because now... My site, over, you know, it took a year to get it to where it is now, but I'm getting like 1,000 hits per day, which is pretty substantial starting from nothing. But yeah, it's kind of a work in progress. But the money, it always seems like you don't really want to spend more than what is coming in, because there's obviously an investment, but you need to see a promise or a return of investment down the road. And but in terms of putting the book out on the market, it's actually, in terms of sales, it's actually done pretty good. So it's just you have to balance and weigh the cost and time up front, and then from there say, where can I really make profitability? The book sales, you actually, as long as you're coming out with new editions of the book and keeping it fresh, I think, and the readers see the value in that, I think it could really take off. But like I said, the disadvantage that I was at initially is that this book is the first of its kind in the market. And I think if you were a second mover, as they would call it in the business world, that might actually have a much bigger impact in terms of profitability. So it's not, you can come out with a really high quality book, right? But if the market isn't ready for it yet, or it's too early on, your profitability is going to be questionable. So it's not to say that I didn't get my return of investment. I did. And actually this book led to an opportunity of me getting a job in marketing at a biotech company. So in terms of looking at a dollar number, it opened a door for me and channeled me into something that I never even thought possible. So that's when I look back at the book and I say, and I don't really care how much money I made off it, although it is important to make a second income, and that was my original goal. But past that point forward, I realized that book that I wrote led to a much greater opportunity where I'm at now.
So the bottom line here is you not only make money from your product, but that product opens up other opportunities for you as well.
Correct.
Including some offline opportunities, apparently.
Yeah, and it's expanded my network dramatically. You know, and I never thought I would be in a marketing position, but... Just from learning, reading, and writing a product taught me so much about what I never even thought possible and a skill set that I never thought existed. So the value of the book that I wrote, I don't think can be measured in terms of dollars and revenue and return of investment. That's kind of my real answer. So.
And just a quick question. When did you release the book, the ebook, Generating a Second Income for the Poor Graduate Student? I mean, like what month, what year?
It was released approximately June 1st of 2012.
Okay.
So it's...
Not even a year.
Not even a year.
And just out of curiosity, when did this marketing position open up for you? When were you hired on after they were aware of the ebook and brought you on?
So I shared that with a lot of people in my network, but the current position I'm at now, I probably sent that book off 6 months later, but I was brought on in January of 2013.
Okay.
Because of the interest in that book and the discussions that I've had with my network, it led to a job opening.
So we're talking about 6 months here between your releasing the ebook and actually getting a great offline opportunity here. So that's pretty amazing.
And that's what I'd like to actually focus the most on is the offline opportunity, mm-hmm. because that's the part that I really am grateful for. Because I didn't think, like I said, the initial mindset of writing the book was, I want to make a second income, but it led to something that you basically can't measure. So that's the part that I think everyone should be focused on too, is not just the disappointment maybe up front. I haven't seen a return investment in the first 6 months or even a year. It can take a long time, and you have to be patient. And maybe further down the road, the book sales will pick up if I do like a second edition and put it out on ClickBank. But it has a lot of promise, and like I said, it's going to lead to more opportunities down the road. So
great. You mentioned about $250 that you spent for the general creation and marketing, and of course your time later on writing for the blog. But in essence, we can look at an initial startup cost of $250.
Mm-hmm.
So you released this book in June of 2012. And can I just ask you offhand, do you have like a ballpark figure of how much revenue you actually generated from your ebook since its release?
Sure. I've sold about 200 copies at $5 a piece.
Okay. So that's a quick $1,000 right there in revenue.
And then I have made the book free,
mm-hmm.
and that was only because I wanted to add value back to my audience, because a lot of times they were saying, and I have a lot of friends who are graduate students, and I didn't want to charge them for this book, but I saw an opportunity because the traffic that was going to my site was okay. And the minute I made that book free, it doubled. It doubled. So what that does is it establishes more credibility and your reputation from there. So if mm-hmm. I wanted to release a second product, I have already captured an audience. So some people may not think that's a smart move. They want to keep, if you made $1,000, why would you make the book for free? Why wouldn't you keep it going? And like I said, the number one thing is you have to show your audience that you're not just trying to make money off them, but you actually care, and you're offering good quality content and value to the reader. Mm-hmm. And that was how I use my blog, is to bring in this audience and keep building it from there, because traffic is king and so is high quality content. That's what gets you ranked. You can come up with a great product, right? You can spend 4 months writing a book, but I'd say that's only 10% of the equation. 90% of it is marketing, because if you don't know how to market and sell your book, it doesn't matter how good of a product it is. If you're not getting traffic to your site and people don't know about it, it's not going to sell. So that was why I made the book for free, because it was a smart marketing decision.
Well, the saying is that content is king, but marketing is queen. And you got to have both.
True.
And if you can go, as you said, you doubled your traffic by making it free. I mean, I'm estimating that you had about 300 to 500 page views before you released it for free, before you released the book for free?
It was probably 150.
Oh, so even lower.
And now it's up to 600 to 1,000 a month.
Okay, so we're not just talking about doubling. I mean, this is just...
It doubled.
It's exploded.
Right, now it's like tripled and sometimes quadrupled, so it's gone way up. But and I can look at the trends of the keywords of what people are typing in, and second income is like top two. So a lot of people are typing in. And there's probably at least 100 to 500 searches a day on that particular topic. 7 ways to make an alternative income for a graduate or college student. That's like, that article has had like thousands of hits, you know. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people commenting on it, but a lot of people looking at it. A lot of people thinking about it. So there is a big need there, an untapped market. Because they, you know, most, and here I'll tell you the number one reason why people don't pursue a second income opportunity is fear, and also the an amount of time that they think and money that you have to invest up front. That fear puts them in a complacency shell because you don't want to see where it could go from there, because there is a certain risk. And as any online entrepreneur would know, you have to take risks. You have to, and like I said, you have to not be afraid of failing, because I can't guarantee that a product that you write or make is going to sell, and you have to market it yourself or find out smart ways of marketing it. That's going to ensure your success.
Well, I know there's a definite fear of failure for a lot of people, but I think ignorance, just not knowing what's out there, is a big factor as well. And, you know, your ebook addresses one way of making an online income right away. You know, of course, there's always work. There's always some sweat equity you got to put in. But you tell somebody, here's what you got to do. You know, this will cost about this much to do. You don't have to, you know, clean out your savings to start essentially what is a business here. I think a lot of people are going to go for that. And as your traffic stats show, you're getting a lot of interest. On that note, I mean, it just sounds like a really good success story here. What other ebooks or products do you have in the pipeline that you'd like to talk about that you will release?
From the first book that I generated, and I actually would start sending that to a lot of my network contacts, and they became interested in it. But from there, it led to me doing a lot of informational interviews, and the product that I'm coming out with would be another second ebook, but it will be, and people like to hear a story, you know, honestly, because if you can speak from experience, that in itself has a lot of power, because you're actually telling what's true to reality. You're not just coming out with some made-up idea or something that hasn't been tested. So my second book would be on how to teach graduate students or postdocs or even someone in a professional field how they can expand their network and essentially build it from thin air if you've really had a struggle in this area, because it is a skill that can be learned and developed over time. And that's why I want to share my story and the things that I have learned to help people really expand on their networking capabilities. So I already have half the book written.
It's on your website already.
Yeah,
so on donation.
That's a three-part series, but that's probably just half of the book. So to be honest, I'm probably not going to release it until I'm done with my thesis and I'm all said and done. I'd actually like to put the title, the PhD next to my name, because it does add credibility. So once I'm all said and done, yeah, I will release it, but there's really no rush. Now, the reason why I put a three-part series out there, it's kind of like, well, why would you...
You're talking about your blog series.
Yeah,
networking.
Well, why would you give away half your book and your information for free? Well, it sets the hook. Now, a lot of times people will put... they'll write a page article and then they'll say, if you're interested, please sign up for my mailing list. Or what I do is I see how many people are actually sharing this article. Is there an interest in it? Is the effort worth it? And I tested the market a bunch of times. You know, I actually, LinkedIn is a great way because they have group discussions. The group in particular is PhD Careers Outside of Academia, has 20,000 members. Okay, so.
Of which I'm one.
So I post this preview article, just like, let's say, part two of the three blog series. And I look and I see how much traffic is it getting. Are people commenting on it? Are they receptive to it? What is the actual audience? Because, it's all about the customer and as the end goal. Mm-hmm. And it looked pretty promising. So, and then when I got invited to be a speaker at a networking conference, I was like, okay, there's definitely a need here and an opportunity. So then I finished the three-part series. And then I thought to myself, it makes sense to just wrap this up and put it in a book, mm-hmm. and sell that as a product. And again, you've already established your trust with your audience and your credibility, because they know your background. They've already read your articles, so they say, "Oh, this is really good information," and you kind of set the hook. Because I think that's the hardest part is just setting the pace or building your audience's trust and then going from there. So I think, and if you look at someone who, a blogger, and actually her name is Thesis Whisperer. She's from Australia. She can release a book in a day and generate 50 sales. Why? Because she already has the audience's trust. She's been blogging for a couple of years. She has a high amount of traffic. She has the credibility. And when she released that book, it sells like hotcakes. But she knows, based on what the audience wants to hear and read and listen to, she knows of new up-and-coming products to develop. So the hardest part is getting started, is developing your credibility and that sort of thing. That's why I say people should get their professional blog launched first. That was the part that I didn't do. The first thing that I ever did was I wrote my book. And I didn't know how to market it. And I realized I had to have a professional blog as a platform to market it and sell it. So I did it the opposite. You're supposed to blog first, build up your reputation, credibility, then come out with a book. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to write the book first.
I think you're just so inspired by your own troubles that you just saw the book.
Exactly.
And if you could go back now, you know, like I asked earlier, if you could go back, you'd probably start the blog first.
I would have started the blog.
Build the audience.
I would have started it two, three years ago.
Well, if we could, you know, 2020, as they say, hindsight is always 2020. But that's great advice. And certainly having a free product, you know, definitely, you know, like you said, builds up your credibility. And it, most importantly, it gauges your audience. So you're not releasing something that no one is interested in. And that's a great approach. I'd like to know and I think our readers would like to know, what's going to happen to your blog site right now, the gradstudentway.com, once you graduate and you're, well, no longer a graduate student, but actually Dr. Raver?
Yeah, many people have asked me that question. And I've played around with a bunch of ideas. The name in itself, I don't think I'll ever change. And I'll probably end up spawning off that site and coming up with a second one because I'll be at a different stage in my life. But that doesn't mean I'm going to keep the site. The site has a very directed audience, and there's certain content that I will always keep true and dear and to the audience and keep that running. So, because the pitch is to graduate students and postdocs, but you already know once I'm a working professional that I'm actually going to kind of put the graduate life behind me and that sort of thing. But my whole intention and thoughts, where you can keep that blog endlessly running if you bring in guest blog posters, and there's tons of them, and I get requests. Like I said, if you have that traffic going up, and people are looking, wow, this is really great content, people are going to request to even to have their articles featured on your site, and that benefits you as well as them. It's a win-win situation because you're promoting their site, their product, whatever it is, with a backlink, and they're providing you with good quality content that the readers want to read. So it can never end. You can keep it going forever as long as the content is there and it's addressing what the readers want to read. And but like I said, I want to kind of branch away from that, so I'll probably just let the guest blog posters run the site. Honestly.
Well, and that will be a great opportunity for our readers certainly to contribute if they can. And
if it's good content, you know, I'll probably be an editor. I'll probably turn it into
step up. as I call it, a word sheriff.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So, you know, because that's definitely a great blog site, and I would not want to see it just shut down and just to go away, especially after building up this audience that you have now. I mean, that's a valuable tool for marketing other products or other people. So moving along, this is a question I had personally, and I think our readers do too, but, you know, you've had success now in the, quote, real world, you know, getting this position right now offline. Do you see yourself still working and making an online income once you graduate, once you're more, I guess you could say, stable?
Yes.
Okay.
Because you never want to put that aside, because, or to put it away, I should say, because you having a passive and a second income never hurt, especially in this economy. I mean, it's a no-brainer. So wherever I can capitalize on any opportunities, I will. And I don't think anyone should get discouraged from that. I think it should be, because once you have a starting point, it does get easier. It's not like it gets harder, because you're over the learning curve, you learn the ropes, and new ideas are going to just keep coming in. But it's definitely something that I think is always, there's always going to be a dire need to have. Even so, the real question is, how much time will you be able to dedicate to this while you are a working professional and you're putting in, you know, 40, 50 hours a week? Now, I have evenings and weekends, and they've even said, you know, what you do on your free time is your own.
Yeah.
It's completely up to you. So, and it's like, I'm not really thinking about that yet, but there's always going to be that thought in the back of my mind, that drive to keep this going. And I think a lot of people, once they've invested enough time into it already, they're going to want to keep it going indefinitely. Mm-hmm. Because and I'll tell you one thing, when you see your first couple of sales, or you see a return of investment, or you're like, man, people really like it, or you see your first review, or someone left a comment, that's when you get excited, because that's when you see your hard work is paying off, and that drives you to keep coming out with new products or whatever it is, because you're like, I've actually reached an audience. And that's actually where I get the most deep satisfaction, is it's not just focusing on the income, but actually helping people. And if you read my book, it's helping people overcome a problem or write about that. Because if you can tell a story or help someone overcome a problem, I think that is, that's what people want to read. Because in terms of marketing, why are you writing a book? Is it original, and is it helping solve a problem? Because if you look at all the books out there, it's addressing something. It's got to be some problem-oriented thing. And for me, it was lack of income.
Yeah.
So,
and if you're not addressing a need, you're not going to see your sales.
Correct.
It's going to sit there and just gather virtual dust, I guess. Just out of curiosity, how long can I've tried that readers or anyone expect to access a free copy of your ebook, Generating a Passive Income for the Poor Graduate Student?
For how long? I would say until the end of August.
Okay.
And then from there, I'm going to probably think about other avenues and actually, you know, even pricing it for $2.99 is, you know,
Well, then you folks listen up and go on to Ryan Raver's thegradstudentway.com, where you can access right now for free generating a second income for the poor graduate student. And thank you very much, Ryan, for your time, and thanks for coming down here and speaking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been my pleasure.
All right.